Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 18, for December 7th, 2006. Swingin' the Rubber Chicken. Hey, everybody, this is Alex, and we are here. We've got Scott Bourne in Brook. I see, I want to say Brook Harbor. I don't know why. It's Gig Harbor. Hey, Scott.
It's still Gig Harbor.
It's still Gig Harbor. It hasn't become a Tetra Harbor or Peta Harbor yet.
Nor is it Brooklyn or Brookhaven or anything like that.
Now, Scott, you said you got a new toy in the house?
Well, I got a new mixer that BSW sent over for me to play with, my newest toy is actually my brand spanking new MacBook Pro Core 2 Duo 17-inch with 3 gigs of RAM.
It finally showed up.
It finally showed up, and let me tell you, it is one cool little puppy, and it's very, very, very nice. It's fast. I can tell it's faster. This is one of these few times you can actually tell it's faster. The screen, I don't know, it just seems like 3 times brighter than my last one for some reason, and I'm digging it. I got a FireWire 800 port finally.
Does it go to sleep?
It goes to sleep anytime you ask it.
My MacBook Pro doesn't go to sleep. Here's the thing: is I patched my MacBook Pro so that it would not turn off automatically, and now it doesn't ever turn off automatically, you know, by itself. But it won't go to sleep.
You patched like the kernel.
What? Yeah, I did that little kernel patch.
Oh, my gosh.
And now about half the time, and it only randomly turned off once in my entire history of my thing. And now about 50% of the time, my MacBook Pro won't go to sleep. So I get to my house and it's all hot. You know, it's anyway.
Battery's dead.
but your 17-inch is going to sleep, Scott.
My 17-inch will go to sleep, although I just did that as a test, knowing you were having trouble. I can't actually leave it sleep because when I run Pro Tools on it, that makes Pro Tools unhappy. So,
yeah.
But otherwise, it is a wonderful machine, despite the fact that it cost an arm and a leg.
Now, and it also means that you now have to, I believe you're now going to have to fly first class all the time. I guess you...
Well, I fly first class in my brand new 2006 Chevy Impala SS anywhere I want to go.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. I mostly think about how computers will affect my flying schedule. And unless I'm willing to fly first class all the time, I've been afraid of the 17-inch. That's been my...
And just for the record, I have not flown coach since 1996.
Wow.
I'm too horizontally challenged to even think about that.
Yeah, good. Now, we also have in the studio, we've got John Foster.
Hello, hey, John. Everybody. I've been practicing my voice since last night.
You've been practicing your voice?
Yeah. Well, I was drinking IPA, Racer 5, and smoking cigars and staying outside in the cold until the wee.
So John's been prepping his voice. We also have Merlin in the house.
Hello, Alex.
Merlin man.
And, I smoked 2 cigars today, so I feel especially ready for the show tonight.
See, oddly enough, that's not what I smoke when I get ready for the show. It's just not the same.
Really?
Know? No, you know.
So, all right, kids, keep it clean.
Hey,
keep
you know, clean. Now you can't see this, Scott, but I'm very proud of the office. So the we finally got the Sonics up on the walls.
Yeah, it's dead to me.
It's dead. It's dead to John. So we don't have.
Now, are we talking the back office?
This is the back office. Yeah, the back office now has Sonics in most of the walls. I didn't put it around all the walls because I didn't want it to get too dead. I wanted to leave it with...
That's very cool. Glad to hear that.
Anyway, I just thought I'd let you know. It's something that we're very excited about. So anyway, what's on the top of the list?
New beta parallels.
A new beta of parallels. Now, this one, the big thing about this, from what I understand, is that that you can now open stuff, you can go through parallels to boot camp. Is that correct?
Well,
how does that work?
You can use your boot camp partition for parallels. So that means that you can either boot into Windows specifically, have it take over the screen, use all the drivers, or you can just use that one app that you need to use by double-clicking it, and it'll open. Right next to all your other Mac OS stuff.
So you're still in. So you launched in OS 10,
mm-hmm.
and you're sitting in OS 10. And when you open Parallels, you're still really using the boot drive.
You're using the Bootcamp boot drive. So instead of a virtual disk,
right?
So you can have it both ways.
Which now will that actually affect the performance?
Yeah, it will, because in Parallels, you're not getting a full on fast Windows machine,
right?
And you still don't have drivers for the video card. So if you're playing right. games like Half-Life 2, you definitely want to use Bootcamp to go into that.
Right.
But if you have a need to run, for example, IE7, that's Internet Exploder 7, then you can run it next to your Mac.
So if I want to use a high-end thing, I still need to reboot.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to use something like a really high-end game or a high-end graphics, I still can't use it through a window.
Well, they've also improved the graphics drivers within Parallels as well.
Okay.
So if you're wanting to run XSI, that's a mouthful, then it's actually very doable in Parallels now.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to try it.
One thing that a lot of people are excited about, Matt Howey had a good post about one new feature of it called Coherence, which now allows you to actually run kind of a separate Windows window, almost along the lines of having Classic running,
right.
where you've got it kind of running in the background, but then you can have a window open, and it'll be just that window into, say, IE or what have you. So if you're a web developer and you're somebody who wants to test out, or you're an interaction designer, or you're doing CSS and you need to compare on platforms, I mean, this, you just took a big leap forward in terms of making it easy to use.
And Coherence is something completely separate from Parallels?
No, it's part of
it's Parallels. It's one feature of Parallels.
So it lets you pull a window out of the Windows window. So
it's pretty remarkable to see, because you know, you're used to seeing Windows running that kind of full Windows take over everything mode, and here it's just running. It looks just like another window out there.
Well, if you were running Virtue Desktop, you could have Windows running in there, and so you could switch back and forth. It was pretty cool to do that. You know, that way you could switch to Windows and switch back to Mac, and it did its thing. But with Coherence, you can basically have that window right alongside your other Mac things, which means it makes it less like running Windows. And more like running a Mac.
And we know how much, you know, this really is big news for Scott, because I know Scott's
you're probably pretty excited about this, right?
Yeah, this is big news for Scott.
Yeah, I figured out how to run Windows in parallel. It's called buying a $400 Dell and sitting it next to my Mac.
I have to admit, it is funny that I use Windows more now since the Intel Mac than I did ever before, you know, because I have it open probably once a day, you know, because I need to open some app or I need to do something that, and I'm much more open to it now.
But this is a pretty tasty development. I haven't used it myself because I have like 2 megs of disk space left. But if you're somebody who has to run Windows stuff, you know, to kind of keep the lights on, this looks like a really terrific way to do that without having to.
Hey, Alex, I just want to warn you about this. If you continue to do this, you are going to go blind.
Do what?
Use Windows?
Use Windows.
Well, it's not just Windows that does this. I mean, you can use other operating systems in this.
Right.
You can run Solaris, you could run Linux, you could run Ubuntu, all those different things. You could even actually run DOS.
Well, this gets into the whole conversation of really how we interact with an OS is starting to become really different. When we have this, where we just have simply, it looks like what's really happening here is we're kind of moving to a point where we just don't, at least on the Apple hardware, we don't really care what operating system we're, I mean, Scott cares. But for the most part, all of us, you know, we could be running anything we want, mm-hmm. you know, sitting on that platform in just Windows. So, and that gives you an excuse to have a couple 24-inch monitors. Right. You could have 4 operating systems running all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It really is the new classic.
The new classic.
It is. Yeah. It's the new classic. I mean, right. basically, so if you wanted to run Railroad Tycoon, which is a really fun classic DOS game, you could actually have that run, and you wouldn't actually have to go back to the old hardware to do that.
Hey, John, could I run Zork?
Yeah, actually, you can run Zork. But you don't need to. You don't actually need to run Zork on Windows, because they ported it. They took all the old Infocom DAT files, and there's actually a player that does the parser.
Is it like MAME?
Like, it's like MAME, but it's for...
What about Glider? Can I get my hands on Glider?
What's really weird is that I've actually gotten into, occasionally when I need a little break, I've gotten into booting into Windows, or, you know, so that I can play Apple II E games.
Oh, on the webpage.
Yeah, there's this webpage.
Oh, how funny.
There's a webpage that has they've basically taken all the Apple II, I mean just about every Apple IIe game in existence.
What's the name of the site?
Okay, now I can't remember. See, I brought it up off the top of my head and
we'll get back to it. But it's a pretty cool thing. So with the new Parallels, you don't actually have to switch to Boot Camp to do that. You could without doing the reboot, you could just open up Internet Explorer. Type in the URL, which is?
virtualapple.org.
Yeah.
There you go. And you can run Aztec. And you can run
Aztec.
Apple Panic.
And Aztec.
And you could run Galaxian.
And Aztec.
Oh, they got that Stagecoach game, too.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And you can play Aztec.
They got Aztec?
They got Aztec. That was I gave up years of my life playing Aztec, so that was a great game.
So funny, though. I mean, I remember back in the day when they very first introduced the 1.4... Was it the 1.4 meg floppies that could run, the HD floppies that could run on Windows?
The HD.
Is that what they were called?
HD had all.
Was that right?
No,
am I remembering
high
correctly?
High density.
Well, I only needed like four of those to run everything that I had. But it was so, I mean, that was such, it seemed like such an incredible leap forward at the time. I don't know what this was, probably like the late 80s, early 90s, but it was such a leap forward that you could run, it was so transparent to for somebody on Windows to give you a disk and you just pop it in and it would work. And now today we take that so much for granted, but you start to think about all those little baby steps back then about how you kind of had, you know, your number two and you got to try harder, you know. And now today, I mean, there's a lot you can get away with just having a Mac for, you know.
Well, especially in this case. Now there is something that I think we need to get out of the way here. We have to have our weekly iPhone report.
We wish we had theme music for this.
I know. Dun, dun, dun.
Actually, it's like
iPhone.
Hello.
UPhone. Scott phones. iPhone.
I just want to point out that I did not bring it up.
So Scott, do you have any thoughts this week on the iPhone?
And now we're jumping to Gig Harbor, and we're going to have Scott Bourne give us the report. Give us the traffic report of iPhone, Scott.
Well, here's what you need to know, friends. Our pal, Kevin Rose, a la Dig Kevin Rose, who has a propensity to consume alcoholic beverages known as beer and rant, gave away some interesting secrets about the new iPhone that made it to YouTube, and it's been downloaded a bajillion times, and pretty much all you need to do is watch that video to get the latest poop.
Well, how do you know Kevin's poop is accurate?
He's been known to have accurate poop.
Oh, his poop has been known to be accurate.
So glad you asked that, because that you've fallen right into my trap, Mr. Man.
Curses.
You're knee deep in Kevin poop.
It is well known that Kevin accurately predicted the Nano before anybody else. So there you have it.
If you look at the patent that was posted everywhere, it's very different, that patent. It doesn't talk about two batteries. It doesn't talk about touch screen. It talks about ceramic case and fake diamonds and all that other
stuff.
Well,
the Zirconia case seems much more exciting to me for some reason.
Something that won't scratch.
Yeah.
Well, here's what we know. It's not going to be available in brown.
No, it'll be available in clear.
No, I think it's Zirconia case that was totally clear, where you could see all the little innards going on. I'd get that.
Yeah, I think that would be
fun. That's our rumor. That's my rumor, and I haven't even been drinking anything.
Here's my pledge to you, my friend. If the iPhone is somehow, some way, by some miracle, and no one expects it to be, but if it is shipping at Macworld,
yes,
when we sit down at the Apple Store to do Mac Break Weekly, I will hand you your very own.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Scott. You're the best. Because I've been waiting for this iPhone for like a year and a half now. My Trio is barely working.
I feel your pain. My Trio just makes fun of me whenever I try to sync it.
Yeah, no, I don't even bother anymore. You know, my Trio lives in one world and my Mac lives in another. Now, Merlin will tell me his Trio and his Mac are getting along in the same world.
You know what? I've stopped saying that because I know that I am in some kind of mythological way, like testing some kind of fate by constantly saying that. So I've stopped saying that.
It's really easy.
Yeah, but he's literally, not just because he's named Merlin, he's literally a wizard at all this organizational stuff. So it makes sense it'll work for him, but normal people can't make it work.
You know, it's really easy to sink a trio. All you have to do is drop it in a glass of water. Wet all the way to the bottom.
Okay, okay.
And so that wraps up this section of iPhone.
iPhone, now we're going to get back to
it. Right?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I do want to mention that there is a new Twit podcast coming called Twi, This Week in iPhone.
Hosted by Scott Bourne.
Yeah, it'll be all the iPhone rumors you can possibly stand.
So now we had a couple postings, a lot of postings about Mac Heist, and I still have no idea what they do.
Mac Heist is it's a treasure hunt. You have to go around a bunch of fake websites, find bits of information, which actually then spells things like passwords or URLs or that kind of stuff. They're into week three. I skipped week two. It seemed to be a bit geeky for me.
Really?
Well, yeah. Well, no. I mean, it started off with Morse code, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm listening to that going, it spells that. Okay. So that's right off that I can hear Morse code and translate it.
it was too geeky for
you,
you say.
It was too geeky for me. But
Mac Heist, I'm so tired of this semaphore.
Yeah. But Mac Heist is still pretty it still looks fun. Mm-hmm. It's not too late to get in. You just need an invitation. So if anybody wants one.
Is it that everybody who's already a member gets a certain number of invites to give out?
Yeah. So I still have some invites to give out. So if you want to...
No, I've got them. I haven't done it.
You haven't participated?
I don't play games.
You're not really into games?
I'm really not.
Kind of interesting because Sketch Fighter just came out from Ambrosia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new fighter game that's based on somebody doodling on a piece of paper in class.
As if really?
Yeah. And so it's a top-down view with paper, and it looks all sketchy and I don't know. It's kind of like Asteroids and Defender and, I don't know.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
They used to have a great pinball game.
Pinball game.
I want to say Crystal Castle or something like that.
But it actually had
like bumping.
You could move it around.
And Broshies have some great games.
And then before that, and then after that, they had Maelstrom. Which is an Asteroids game.
I find that Ambrosia is probably one of the more schizophrenic companies I've ever seen as far as software development. I think it's whatever Andrew Welch just feels like writing today. It ranges. You have Wiretap, which is records audio on your
Mac. That's them too.
Wiretap Pro, Snaps.
Is video Q them as well?
No. Wiretap just does audio, but it'll let you wire in, any of the audio inputs, so you can record both. And then Snaps lets you record, those screen grabs. So you have Snaps, and then you have, but then you have, then you go to this, then you have all these games, and then you have.
it's very schizophrenic. Yeah. They've been around forever, though, haven't they?
They have. Anything else?
Hey, Scott, what do you know about cheating on your games on your iPod?
Well, a couple of the news and rumor sites have posted a link, which I don't have handy, but I'm sure it's easy to Google. Oh, sorry, I wasn't supposed to say that as a verb. They have offered some cheat codes for some of the real popular iPod games. And I've been trying to win Texas Hold'em, which I got addicted to thanks to my pal Derek Story. And I'm getting my butt kicked. So I just greedily went and downloaded these cheat codes for Texas Hold'em. And there are all kinds of Easter eggs and cool things you can do with the game that you didn't know about. So these $4.95 games have just had some new extensibility given to them by the release of these cheat codes, which I understand came right from Apple.
Wow.
Yeah, I still need to get some of those games on my iPod.
I'm going to tell you, Alex, they are brilliant. I think that personally, Apple's missing the boat if they don't continue to develop this kind of stuff. It's affordable.
Or allow other people to. I mean, wasn't that the big upset? Is there were a lot of people that wanted to develop games. A lot of people wanted to develop games for the iPod, and Apple didn't give them any way to do that. And then Apple started releasing their own, and I think that's what a lot of developers were a little upset about.
And then the developers really want to develop for the iPod. I mean, the iPod is an amazing platform, and you see them everywhere. There's millions of them. There's 50 million of them have been sold, and it would seem to me that I would love to have my own app on there.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think that everybody that's tired of paying $70 for an Xbox game that the kids get tired of in 15 minutes will be pretty thrilled to know these games are under $5. And, you know, I've been playing Texas Hold'em almost every day for 2 months. So I think they're really cool.
admitting you have a problem.
When they talk about potentially the next generation of iPod catching up with the Zune in terms of the wireless stuff, are they talking about that? Are they talking about Bluetooth probably as the likely networking or the likely wireless for that?
It seems like Bluetooth would make the most sense.
Because it would be really interesting. I'm totally pulling this out of my butt, but it would be pretty cool if you could have a little small kind of portable Bluetooth joystick controller. Because God knows there's enough firepower going on your iPod that you could probably have some pretty cool games. And have an external controller for that would be totally badass.
The patent that nobody read, everyone got to the diamond part and they stopped reading, actually talks about Bluetooth, 802.11, and other wireless transmitters inside this case.
What?
Yeah.
In a portable battery-powered device?
Yeah.
Does that seem like a lot of load in terms of battery?
Well, a cell phone actually has way more power requirements for its transmitter than 802.11 does. Because it's shorter range. It can only be 35 milliwatts total power. And Bluetooth is even less.
Yep.
So, sure, there'd be three transmitters in it, but you can be really creative in how you power them. You know, if you don't need to power them, then power it down. If you don't need to get something, it's just like the old power manager on the PowerBooks back in the day. You know, that was very innovative, and Apple was really the first company to have major power management where they were able to shut down displays, drives, CD-ROMs, modems, all that kind of stuff as it wasn't needed to save battery power.
Slightly off topic here. I've recently had to travel a little bit more, and I'll tell you, it sure does make a difference to shut off the airport and shut off the Bluetooth, and then bring the screen down if you don't need it. That's my I used to always leave my wireless on, and Bluetooth never even occurred to me. And then I read somewhere that said, you know, obviously take your screen down to the very lowest notch that you can handle. And Scott, you'll really see this on the 17-inch because that's the hugest power draw. But shutting off your airport, like if you're on a plane, and shutting off your Bluetooth, it actually does make a difference.
It's interesting because they always talk about turning your damn cell phone off on an airplane. But they never say turn off your 802.11 ABG.
Well, you know, actually, one of the things that's interesting about turning off your cell phone is that I was talking to an engineer. I spend a lot of time on planes, and ended up one time sitting down an engineer that works on that does both work with the airlines, but also works on cell phones. You know, design. And one of the things that he said, he goes, if you have any health concerns about a cell phone, you should always turn it off. You know, when you're on the plane, because what happens is the cell phone, when it can't reach a signal, it goes full blast trying to find the signal, and it's constantly trying to find the signal. And that's why, if you've ever noticed, you have a phone, you leave it on, and in a 5-hour flight, it'll be dead when you land. Mm-hmm. It's because it was running full tilt the entire time. He said, brought 4-foot
radius.
When you're roaming,
your power goes plummets.
Right, because it's always looking for something. Well, he said, basically, it looks for 4 hours straight, you know, when you're in a flight. And he said, whether you can argue about whether you should put it up by your head or not, but he said, it looking for 4 hours straight within 4 feet of your head is not a good idea.
He goes,
that's the biggest reason to turn off your phone. It doesn't matter what they think. You know, he said it's not going to affect any of the instruments on the plane, but it may affect the instruments in your head. You know, so...
Speaking of power, I just thought I'd also mention something that happened with my new laptop. I got 4 hours and 28 minutes off my first cycle.
You are kidding. On a 17-inch?
On the 17-inch. The battery is, by the way, quite a bit bigger than on the 15-inch. That could be the reason. But I usually got 3 hours and 10 minutes on my 15-inch, and this one I got 4 hours and 28 minutes and 4 hours and 18 minutes in the first two cycles.
That's incredible.
I don't get anything like that.
I get, on my 15-inch MacBook Pro, I get, right now, I've got lots of stuff turned down, and it's got 2.5 hours, it says. If I'm not doing much, I can get 3 hours, but that's with a tailwind.
Yeah.
Do you recycle your battery, Merlin?
I try to do it every 30 days, but people still say that's voodoo, but I like to do it every 30 to 45 days.
Mine cycles, as I said at the beginning of the show, mine cycles every day.
But to truly cycle it, then you have to leave it dead for 4 hours, right? Isn't there some rubber chicken thing you got to do?
You leave it off for four hours.
Do you have to swing the rubber chicken?
You have to swing
the
rubber chicken. So you got to run it all the way down to 000.
Right.
Then you got to leave it all the way off for 4 hours.
At least.
Exactly. It's like to fully drain it.
Where's the rubber chicken? get some coffee. Watch.
Throw salt over your shoulder. And then you have to, you charge it like overnight. You leave it like 12 hours or something plugged in.
Yeah, before you
Now, John, do you believe that helps?
Well, it depends on the battery type. I know that the new battery technology shouldn't need this, but I've heard conflicting things. I've heard from the geniuses that you should cycle your batteries.
Would you mind using air quotes when you use that word?
Air quotes? Okay.
Genius.
There we go. I've heard from the geniuses that you have to do this because one of the people that I know complained about their battery, and so the genius said, well, this is what you need to do when you first get a battery. And I was thinking,
no, what are you supposed to do when you first get a battery?
Basically, charge it up, drain it to zero, the rubber chicken, the coffee, go get donuts, replug it in, wait, and then you can use it like normal. And then you'll get the maximum. But that seemed to me that if that was the case, they would do this at the factory to condition the battery before it went out. Otherwise, they would get a whole bunch of defective batteries back, people complaining, hey, this battery only gets an hour. So part of the manufacturing process must do that. I mean, I wouldn't let, you know, if that really was the voodoo and it was supposed to do that, you'd see it in the instructions. You'd see it as the very first thing you had to do with your power book.
I do have to admit, I'm pretty superstitious about when I buy anything, you know, new with a battery, like a cell phone or an iPod or whatever. I leave it plugged in like all night.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want, you know, I have no idea whether it makes any difference or not.
I'm the same way. I got a new remote control today, one of those Logitech, you know, make coffee for your remote controls.
With the screen.
Yeah, with the screen.
The $300 one?
It was not $300.
Was it $250?
Really, you know, I'm not going to get into this.
Okay. How much was it?
It was not very expensive. You can,
How much did you spend on a remote control? Come on, Merlin.
Now the third in Merlin, too, it looks like.
Okay, it was $780.
Okay.
No, it wasn't. See, now I got you.
Why didn't you just buy a used PowerBook and use the remote?
You know, why don't you cut me a break, John?
Okay. you can hack a remote control by using the sound port and a $2.50 IR diode from Radio Shack.
Okay, Phil Tarone. All you need is a Leatherman and some bottle caps and a little bit of ammonium nitrate. Anyway, and so I've been kind of diddling with it, trying to get it to work, and I've been feeling really guilty as I take it off the charging cradle, because I keep thinking that's the mojo that everybody tells you is like, do not disturb the first. But you know what? I wonder, you, John, as somebody in the tech support vertical, can answer this for me.
The psychic tech support.
The psychic tech support. I know what's wrong with your computer before it breaks. But I wonder if it's something to just ensure that before you call customer service, it's got a full charge. So basically it's like a consumer hack where they're like, listen, you know, oh, it's very important that this get charged all the way up, because I wonder how many of the problems happen because somebody like charged it part way and not an issue.
The thing is that tech support, when you call them, has a predefined list, and it's like the top 10 is like, is it plugged in? Is it charged up? Did you, you know, is it on? Is there something plugged into the speaker?
Have you taken the fake screen label off the front?
Fake screen label off.
How many times have you dropped it?
You know, that kind of thing. And like, one of the things that really bothers me when I do tech support is that someone will call and they'll say, well, it does this and this and this. I'm like, okay, well, if you do this, what does it do? Oh, I'm not even near my computer. So the first rule of tech support is to have the computer on and be in front of it.
That site Tricks of the Trade had a great – you ever seen that Tricks of the Trade site where they talk about like little bits of wisdom from people in different industries? And the best tech support one I ever heard is like, if you ask somebody if it's plugged in, they will always say that it's plugged in. And so the tech support trick supposedly is to ask somebody to quote unquote unplug it and then blow the dust out of the prongs and then plug it back in.
That's a good one.
That is a good one, because it ensures that the person has to actually go and it lets them save their ego by going, okay. Yeah, I blew it out. It's all good now.
So I don't know. It's kind of hard to get around the tech support guys, you know, especially when it's me, because I've done all this voodoo. I've zapped the parameter RAM. I've rebooted.
And you never know if it really is going to do
it. I still zap the PRAM. I don't even know why.
When my computer isn't running correctly, I just go, well, I've got
a list of 10 things. It's totally rubber chicken time.
Okay,
what are
the 10 things?
Well, it's funny, because Zeldman posted this big thing one time about what he does before a software upgrade, and then, of course, Reverend Gruber came back with all the things. Thanks. Hey, banana.
Bad 40 minutes. All right.
But for me, like, there's all the, like, I have a pretty, I mean, I don't want to get out of a rat hole, but this is like, for what it's worth, what I do is I, well, of course, you do a restart. I come up in single user mode. I run Applejack.
How do you come in? How do you come up in single user
mode? So you do a restart. After you hear the tone, you hold down Apple S, and you come up in a shell.
In a shell. Okay.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the easy, if you have Applejack installed, there's all kinds of cool stuff you can do. If you don't.
What is Applejack?
Applejack is a program that you install. It's this great little freeware app that you install that run, it installs a little script so that when you start up in single user mode, this is a previous pick of the week for me. You basically can type in Applejack at the command line, and it will, in order, it will do an FSCK, so it'll fix your disk. It will fix your permissions. It will delete caches. It will check your preferences, get rid of your sleep image, and like kind of all the basic rubber chicken stuff.
And well, I think it should actually spin a rubber chicken.
It'd be great if it had a little virtual ASCII rubber chicken. Yeah. and then it'll restart for you. So to me, that's one way. Like, and again, I mean, like, you know, it used to be back in the day, you used to have to run Norton every week because there would be like catalog damage or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what it is, if it's just the Unix or whatever, but it feels much more forgiving nowadays. But I've said this a dozen times on the show, but a lot of times if you're getting a lot of beach balls, in my experience, it's because you have very, very, very slight disk damage. Or it could just be, but if you run an FSCK, you can get rid of a lot of like stupid problems.
So. I just want to jump in here. As a result of your pick of the week, Merlin, I did try Applejack.
Did it work for you?
Did not work.
Well, the there's an upgrade for Intel.
I got that one. The problem is I had that terrible invalid node error. I don't know if you guys ever get that, but that's like the kiss of death error where Apple just tells you, sorry, you got to reinstall everything.
Sounds like a job for Disk Warrior.
Yeah.
I went out and got Tech Tool Deluxe Pro.
Nah.
Did that work?
It worked like a dream.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I've always said there's two kinds of people in this world. There's people who use Disk Warrior and people who will eventually use Disk Warrior. Because it will just
Disk Warrior isn't available in Intel yet, though.
I'm the guy who doesn't back up before he updates a system. I don't do any of this. I don't do any of this management. I very, very, very seldom do rebuild permissions or repair permissions. I mean, some of this stuff is just hocus pocus voodoo.
Yeah, until tonight. It's like admitting you grow weed. You're in so much trouble now that you've admitted all of this.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not in any trouble at all. I think that this goes back to the whole issue of tech support. Tech support likes to go and blame stuff. They like to give the person, here, go and try this, and that gets them off the phone, and they got to go do something else, and maybe the problem will go away, because it does, or the person's just being really silly and they're thinking that they have a problem that they don't actually have. And so some of the time, you know, like once in a blue moon, it'll actually fix something. But for the most part, this is just hocus pocus.
But it might have been accidental.
It might have been unrelated. Yeah, it's unrelated.
For me, it was when I was in the like little admin of our little network at work in the early 90s, I confided to somebody one day that I wouldn't even have a job if people would realize that over 80% of their problems could be solved by restarting.
Exactly. Well,
it's probably less true now, but back in the day, it was
undeniably true. There's a lot of pride today.
A lot of people are really into their uptime and stuff like that, so they kind of don't want to lose their cred.
But look at this. If you restart, or if you're looking at your machine, you're like, where did all my disk space go?
It's Photoshop took it and hid it.
Safari took it and hid it. The Finder took it and hid it. Everything that made a cache went and used a little bit of disk and didn't give it back.
Yeah, I mean,
now you're running out of room.
And if you don't even have to restart, if you just log out and log back in, you get like magical 3 gigs of disk space back.
No, that's something I do a lot. Now, to change the subject completely, because I think that some people are going, okay, I don't care about my computer anymore. There was this interesting article, and I decided I think we should go around and figure this out, because we had some headphone discussions earlier today. Mm-hmm. Is on sci-fi.com, they have the top 5 best ways to listen to your iPod. Now, it was just a list of, and they're just listing a bunch of headphones, but I was curious what everyone uses as their primary headphone, their primary cans.
That's what we call them in the business. We call them cans. Is that what you call them, John? We call them cans.
Cans.
Do you call them cans, Scott?
Yes, we call them cans.
Cans. So Scott, what kind of cans do you wear primarily?
Well, you see, when it comes to headphones, you can't own too many.
But what are your primary? What's your primary cans?
Well, I spend more time in my studio than I do on my iPod. And in my studio, it's the venerable AKG K240S, which is the headphone of choice in most radio stations in America.
I remember those.
And I love those phones, and in fact, I'm wearing a pair right now. But if I'm out on the road with my iPod trying to, you know, not carry around giant headphones, I use the same Shure earbuds that you do, Alex.
Those are the i3.
Those are the about $100 like ones.
Yeah.
A couple hundred bucks.
About $180.
Yeah. And I really like those a lot. I have also a pair of the Bose Quiet Comfort blah blah blahs.
I don't like them, they're a little bulky. I don't like noise canceling headphones because I can hear the noise canceling.
Yeah, they work pretty good on a plane. Other than that, I don't have any use for them. But the Shure ones I tend to like a little bit better just because they're not so bulky and you don't have to listen to the noise-canceling circuitry. But the K240S is the comfortable, even, flat headphone. And I want to stress, if you're doing any kind of audio editing, you don't want those earbuds that add lots of bass because then you're going to get an incorrect picture of your sound. You want something with a flat response, and that's where the K240s come in.
Merlin, what do you use?
Oh, let me look at mine. Well, I've got a pair of those Shures. Mine were, I don't know if they were 180, but they're those Shures that most people use. And I hate the in-the-ear headphones. But the problem is if I go around on Muni, our local transit, with these big-ass headphones on, I feel like a total dork. But having said that, these are recommended to me, I think, by my friend Dan Cohen, if memory serves. And these are the Sony MDR V600 dynamic stereo headphones. They're, I guess, DJ headphones, which means that the little can parts flip around, which also makes them easy to fold and put away. I like those a lot. To answer your larger question, I tend to listen to iTunes over the speakers at my desk. And I actually, believe it or not, I use the stupid AirTunes streaming. And I stream it to 3 Airport Expresses in my house, which I like a lot. And it magically syncs all the music in a way that blows my mind. And then finally, if I'm down in the garage in my special cigar smoking area, I have a big ass boombox. I just play it through. So that's not very interesting, but I like these cans though. I like saying cans.
John,
I use the $10 Sony headphones.
Oh, John,
earbuds.
You're so refreshing.
Well, the reason is that the little spinny case that comes with them. So you put it in, you wind it up. So you can't seem to find that spinny case with the more expensive earbuds. And it's, you know, I like to be able to put those in my pocket instead of in that case rather than put the whole mess of wire in there and then have to untangle it when I want to just jam out.
So I have the Shures, and I pretty much, there are occasions in the week that I do not have the Shures in my front pocket, but they are few and far between. I mean, you know, it's like they're always somewhere nearby. One of the things I like about them is that they give me the problem with typically using since I do a lot of production, I don't want to hear my, I don't want my mic hearing my headphones, and so they're nice because they don't transmit the sound. The other thing is they're like having earplugs with music, you know.
I'm so into having earplugs wherever I go,
and I have the super flangey ones, so just the little. When you buy the Shures, you get these one little round that goes a little into your ear.
You guys can't see this at home, but Alex has this weird little slightly sexual triple dip penetrator earpiece.
And it was so funny.
It's pretty imposing.
What was worse was on the way to Africa, I found earplugs in London. So in Heathrow, they had these earplugs, and they had this thing where you could change how much they plugged so you could hear it. A little plunger that would go in the middle. And I realized I looked at the other end and it was open, and I realized it was the same thing except longer. And so I bought it for $15 and then snipped it a little bit. And stuck them on, and now the problem with that one is it feels like you're getting. I mean, it feels like it's surgically implanting into your ears, and it actually hurt to take them out of my ears. You know, so I stopped using.
So why
those.
Would you take them out?
Well, I didn't. I'd leave them in there for 10 hours, and I'd look up at the wait. I'd look up at the stewardess and,
you mean
and
the waitress.
The stewardess. And
I call her the waitress. Yeah.
It is not.
Flight
it is flight,
boys,
attendant.
Flight attendant.
Welcome to this century. So, the
send your emails to Alex.
hey! I didn't say it. All right. So, oh, I did say that, didn't I? So anyway, so so the. But when I when the flight attendant talked to me with these on when I'm listening to something, this is what I hear.
Really?
Pretty much. I don't hear anything.
Well, what's nice, I mean, I use a couple different kinds. I like the Hushers, which are those, as far as earplugs, they're the little foam ones that you kind of ball into a little tight cylinder and then they expand in your ear. And those are great. I mean, they're not good for like playing in a band.
You're using them with the Shures?
No, no, I was talking about just more
well,
generic. Like
we're not,
you're talking about for like hearing.
I'm talking about, I always put them in so that I have music.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes I just don't want to hear anything.
Now the other
like
thing,
on a plane, you know, I'm invariably in the crying baby section, no matter where I'm seated. I'm not like Scott. I'm not up in the the horizontally challenged section.
So do you bring the baby, or did you just borrow the baby?
I do. Yeah. I have a baby that I bring on every flight just to.
And you don't feed him for a couple of days, and he's just ornery.
It's the same way I train a pit bull. I get real angry, you know. Don't feed it.
It's actually an option on Orbitz. You can check off seat near Merlin where the babies sit.
Yeah, exactly. So now when I'm in the office, I use this huge M station tower, and I can't think of what it's called other than the tower.
I saw that in the Sky Mall the other day, and I thought of you. Right.
Dude,
next to the monogram
awesome.
Dog saddle.
It is awesome. It's like $300.
Yeah.
Now it looks a little funky. Like when you look at it, it's kind of this.
It's very you, Alex. I didn't want to say anything because I don't want to out
mean.
You. But no, there's just a lot of things in your life that look like something from Logan's Run, and this is. And given that you probably should have gone to Carousel at least a couple of years ago, it's kind of funny.
Carousel.
So I
noticed that Alex went red last year.
I went red?
Yes.
Oh, I have to excuse me. I'm exclaiming because out of the corner of my eye, I just noticed one of our topics just came up in my RSS feed.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we should talk about
that. Can we talk a little bit about mass big ass storage?
And
the issues of huge-ass hard drives. Is that boring to you, Alex?
I have lots of huge-ass hard drives.
I watched your tedious Mac break about how you shoot the show and your array. It was a very interesting. For being as tedious as it was really, really good.
Nice.
No. Before the show, I paid Alex the biggest compliment I can ever give to somebody else, which is to say, I hate the kind of thing that you did, but I really like the one that you did. Alex did a tour of how they shoot MacBreak. He showed how they light it and how they use the cameras and how they record. How much is one show in terms of gigs?
One show typically uses up about... when we record it, about 360 to 400 gigabytes.
Wow, that adds up. And then you do a backup.
You want to have two
Can you
copies.
Do a backup with
well,
some
now,
kind?
No, we now have, we back up the shows. This is so we haven't gotten into this part yet. We're going to do another tedious one so that people can watch it.
Sweet.
In pieces. We back up some stuff, but usually one of our raids is, you know, a 5.0 raid, you know, and, you know, raid 5. And so
four of them are... If one of them breaks, four of them are okay.
We have
five, right?
Yeah, we have 14 drives. I think we can have two or three drives go bad. Is that right? Three drives go bad before
John's
we lose
indicated.
Any data. And we've actually had it. It's this crazy thing. We've had a drive go bad in one of our five.
And all you got to do is swap it out, and then like overnight
we ordered it's covered by Apple's Apple Care or whatever we have the 1 year warranty or whatever with the X-Raid. And so we called them. They sent us a new drive. We pulled the bad drive out that's making the noise. Or it's not even making noise. It's just giving us a light that says it's bad. So we pull it out. We send that back to Apple. We shove the new drive in. And over about a day, it just reforms into the system. I mean, you know, we didn't do anything. We just plugged it in.
Two words, Alex. Logan's Run. Well, this is something I brought up a couple weeks ago. I missed last week's show, but I have been struggling with trying to figure out the best way to handle very large amounts of storage. I'm sick of buying 250 gig LaCie drives and seeing them pile up like cordwood. And so we put it out to listeners, and we talked a little bit amongst ourselves, and we want to talk about a few of the easy ways, if you're a Mac user, to deal with very large storage. And John, you have some expertise in this issue.
Yeah, well, I started this project 3 years ago knowing that I would have to deal with massive data and how to build it so that I'm not dealing with a vendor. I wanted to be able to do it myself because bulk drives. Anytime you can just go to this computer store and buy a drive, then you don't have to. You're not waiting around for somebody to fix it. You're doing it yourself.
You're talking about the little like the actual like pop
yeah,
them in
just
and
an
out
OEM
little
drive. Yeah. And so I have. Speaking of cordwood, I have all these old G4s and G3s that are basically not doing any work anymore. And I feel like I've paid
towers.
Too much.
These are towers?
Yeah, towers. Old gray ones and even a blue and white
Yosemite.
G3. Yeah.
I have one of those.
And what the hell do you do with them, right? I could donate them, but I'd rather put them to use. So
Scott could empty out the guts and use them to hide his German bearer bonds.
That's true.
Quit it.
Yeah. But the idea is that you take some drives. You take a 500 gigabyte drives and get a serial ATA controller and rate them up. And then you can use that old – or then you can – then it's a network storage device automatically.
And so for somebody who's like, say, a power user as opposed to like a major league geek, how hard would it be for somebody to set that up?
Really easy. I mean, it's basically you're putting four drives into this Mac, and granted, it's probably right there on the edge of the power of what that is. But it's super easy to set up. So you're basically using. You could either have each drive be separate, so you have four volumes that you could have, or you could use the RAID tool and make them into one huge.
When you say the RAID tool, you've installed all this hardware installed. There's some kind of a controller, which is a
no. It's basically built into the Mac.
So you basically go into
the disk utility. There's a thing that says RAID, and you select it and you say make RAID.
It's very complex.
Yeah, it's very complex. You can make a RAID drive out of old ZIP 100 disks.
You know, I was thinking of
making
a shuffle
RAID. I was
going to
carve mine into throwing stars.
I was thinking of a shuffle RAID. You know, like a little, and you make it like a little design.
Sweet.
And you could, you know, you get RAID 1, I bet you get up to some serious.
Well, the even more consumer-friendly, less power usery version that I've been looking at is Buffalo. I think we talked about this. You and I talked about this off mic a couple weeks ago. Is Buffalo makes these things called the Terra Station that look pretty great.
These are very cool too.
Well, I was just showing you guys. This just popped up in my Deal News RSS alerts. You can get a Buffalo Terra Station 2 terabyte NAS RAID hard drive for $928 shipped.
Right. 2 terabytes.
2 terabytes for $900.
Now that's a RAID 5. Is that two terabytes before or after it's formatted as a RAID 5?
I think that's before the RAID 5, right?
Because you're going to lose. How much do you lose?
25%.
25%.
Yeah. 25. So what do you think of that?
1.5 gigs of storage.
Here's the thing. You're still kind of on your own, which is the way I prefer it. You know, there's not really going to be quote tech support for your RAID, but for $900 to get it off the shelf. Plug it in and go.
Would you buy at least one more extra like spare drive to have around in case one?
I would have to. First thing you have to do is get the Buffalo station, and then you have to open it up to find out what kind of drive is in it. Right. So you want to then get the same brand, manufacturer, model come close, so that if one of the drives does fail, then you can plop it back in and make it go.
I'd like to chime in here, guys. A couple of these standalone RAID solutions don't always work so good with the Mac. I tried the Mac Store One Touch 1 terabyte RAID drives, and they will work, but the problem is that you have to really baby them to keep them working. If they have this routine where they shut themselves down and then they move off your desktop, and even though they're connected, you can't make them work. And I've had tons of trouble with them. I've had a couple other brands where I had those problems. That's why I ended up going to Apple's solution. But anyway, you want to test all these before you actually hook them to your Mac, because some of them, while they say they're Mac compatible, they're not so much.
Okay, so the biggest thing that I found with the NAS devices that I've used is that they're using a file system that's not compatible with Mac. So a Mac file system will actually let you have a slash in the file name. But if you push that off to the NAS, it won't copy it because there's a slash in it, or because there's a space in it, or the file name is just illegal for that particular device, which can be really annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, why should I have, if I'm, you know.
Now, can you reformat it?
Sometimes you can, but the one that I'm specifically referring to can't be reformatted.
Okay.
I mean, it's the file system that it is.
Okay.
Well, we're probably running a little long on this. I want to toss in one more solution for this. I got a great email from a guy named Greg Keene, who has a site called techdigs.net. And, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I'm asking Greg to basically write this up as a 43 folders post because this is pretty great. And he told me a little bit about how he set up his 2 terabyte drive. And one of the best tricks I got for him is something I completely forgot about. And this is not a be-all, end-all solution, but I completely forgot about S3. The Amazon storage
right.
thing.
Yeah.
And so I started playing around today with Jungle Disk. Have you guys messed around much with
Not
Jungle
at all.
Disk? It's pretty great. I mean, Jungle Disk basically, you run this app, and it basically allows you to mount your S3 storage. So S3 is this Amazon super cheap, like, what does it end up costing? It's crazy cheap. It ends up being, you know...
It's like $30. Or
Greg's saying here that that he's doing 200 gigs of storage a month for $20.
Oh, this is, and it's online storage.
That's right. It's okay. Very, very inexpensive. And so if you're doing very large amounts, but here's the cool part is it works a lot like .Mac, except on a much larger scale. So you throw a bunch of stuff into this WebDAV server, and then as it's able to, it does the syncing in the background.
Very cool.
And then once you got one big upload, you can use rsync or chronosync or whatever to automate the, you know, just doing the diffs.
The issue with this is going to be with the quote office because you have a limited bandwidth. So I think if you're the home office by yourself, mm-hmm. perfect solution because you're, you know, that 150K DSL, actually it's only 40K a second up, mm-hmm. wouldn't get saturated. But if you had more than one machine, you're going to saturate your
line. That's true. It's one of those things where like any of these things, you know, the first time is going to be the most painful as it gets the first version of it up. And there's weird limitations and bugs like it won't accept plus signs and file names and things like that.
Same thing with any other NAS.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to know. And I have found, I don't know if it's just me and my bad luck, but I found Jungle Disk a little bit crashy. But it's definitely worth taking a look at. If you've got, let's be honest, I mean, the .Mac storage is probably not the most economical solution for a lot of people, given what you really get out of it. This, if you've got just stuff that you need to like, whether it's even your iTunes library, this seems like a pretty economical way to keep a good backup.
Well, .Mac
someplace.
Is awesome for contacts, phone numbers, email addresses.
Syncing,
that,
basic
you know,
syncing.
The, you know, the basic syncing stuff.
Yeah. But not so much for the other stuff. Hey, but you get to use backup. How nice is that? Backup.app.
It keeps getting better, backup.
It does. It sucks louder and louder.
Which brings us to our recommendations for the week. Now, I don't think we really talked too much about what happened last week. Scott, did you actually listen to the show last week?
I started listening to it, but I had trouble.
Yeah. just for those listening, because there were some posts, that it was really bad and everything else. And it was actually a good show when we recorded it. What happened is that, well, actually, I don't have a solid answer of exactly what happened, but the about a couple minutes into the show and then near the end of the show, and my only the only thing that changed about the way we record stuff is that I was recording via Skype, and then there's this whole process when you record via Skype where you are doing what we call a mix minus, where I'm feeding the audio back to my audio back to the people listening, which in this case was Scott and Chris Breen, and then I'm bringing but I'm still feeding the audio, but, you know, another round of audio into the mixer, and then I was recording via USB from the mixer to a G5, and that's, you know, it all
over the river and through the woods.
Well, it all works. You know, it's very convoluted. You know,
kind of Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, and so anyway. Something happened, and I still haven't figured out exactly what it was, whether it was soundtrack or whether it was the mixer, because the mixer is kind of the software mixer. It's this little Alesis multi-mix, and I had never set up the mix that way before. It was kind of me thinking I was being smart. And literally, it just sounds like it was just garbled. It wasn't like one side or the other. Both my... Oh, and the other thing I did... one more thing is I mixed it so that the Skype was on one side and I was on the... So Skype was left and I was right. You know, so it was a stereo of the two. And somewhere along this path, it just ripped up. I mean, it was...
It wasn't good.
It would hurt you. Probably cause you to hurt other people. You know,
the scary thing is, I was saying before the show, Alex, is we're the experts in this field.
Yeah, I know. So,
why are you bringing all this up again? It sounds like it's very painful for you.
It was so horrible.
Go to your safe place.
I am going to go. Okay. Anyway, So it took a little while to get out, and we got it up, and then everyone complained about it, and then I felt like maybe I shouldn't have put it up. But the point is that I'm not sure. I don't think at the end we got to the recommendations. I think I cut it off before we got to the recommendations. And I
have no idea what my recommendation was last week, but I have a new one this week.
All right. Well, you
I think
can
your recommendation is probably don't use Skype.
My recommendation is not to use Skype. My recommendation is that if you're doing podcasts, don't do that again. So that's all I have to say about that. We're not doing Skype this time. But one thing I did use before we move off to that.
Yeah.
This morning we did a test with TalkShoe. You know, that's what Leo's doing
now. Net at Night. Amber and Leo have been using TalkShoe.
Unbelievably cool.
Really?
Now, I know that it's hard for, I think they're having trouble because they have so many people,
You know what they need to do, Alex? They need to build capacity.
They do need to build capacity.
So they can scale across the enterprise.
Yes,
thank
exactly.
Thank you.
Great.
You may take two drinks. No, but that's, I mean, they get to hurting pretty bad when they get 50, 60, 200.
Yeah, and I only had 10. I had 10 or 12 people on from the Pixel Core. We were doing a Pixel Core internal one. But
what does it do? It's got chat.
I didn't understand what it did either. And to be honest with you, I didn't understand it until about 5 minutes before we went on. Because I had this picture of what TalkShoe did. And I kind of went up and I set up something. And then I kind of moved around. And I kind of, you know, it was one of those things. And I finally figured out all it's doing is a telephone. It is an automated telephone switching system. So basically, it's like a conference call. Everyone's calling the same number. The only difference is that me as the user, this is what makes them different, is that me as the host can turn their phone on and off as far as whether they're able to speak or not. So you have 30
like
people.
Like an investor call.
Yeah, 30 people can. Yeah, exactly. Except they're not. Yeah, anyway.
Except they have no money.
The same concept, right?
Same concept.
It's mostly people are listening, and then if you choose to, you can point to them.
I can point to them, and they can talk. And what's interesting is that everyone, the only way to talk, I thought that you could like do it somehow online. You can do it, but you have to call in. You can use Skype if you want, you know, or anything that any kind of VoIP will work. But you call in, and that's how you're going to talk. Now you can listen to a stream if you don't have a phone. You can just listen to the live stream. But if you have a phone, you can actually interact, and I can see when you're both on the computer and on the phone, I can see you. You know, like you can request, you can kind of raise your hand, and you can even put in the chat window what you want to say. You know, and then I can call on you like a radio show.
Can you have a screener? Can you have somebody who's doing that for you?
I could. What I could do is not be the host. I could have someone else be the host, and me just talking into it.
Wow.
You know, because you can have up to like four or five people on at the same time. Like we were turning people on. It was remarkably smooth. At first I was just like, I could not get my head around it. And then once I started using it, I think we're going to use it. And one of the things I'm thinking of doing, and I don't know whether we're going to use TalkShoe or whether we're going to use, some other, stuff. We're kind of discussing that blog talk thing or whatever, but we're going to use something, where I think that it was so fun to do it this morning with the Pixel Core that I really think we ought to do once a month. Or so, or you know, at least when we'll do at least a test in the upcoming month.
Scott can call in with his iPhone.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you connect to that with an iPhone?
I bet you can.
Is that your pick? So,
no, it's not my pick.
So we spent all this time, and that wasn't your pick.
It's not a Mac. It's not Mac. It's just online.
Okay, but so what is your pick, Alex?
My pick is this one that I started talking about last week, but I'm going to talk about this week because we're using it heavily in the office. It's probably the most used application that we're using right now. And it's a little self-serving because we wrote it. I didn't write it. These guys wrote it at the, in Finland and in Chicago. Ben Syverson and Polly, and I can't say Polly's name very smoothly, so I won't try, but it's called Conduit. And what it is it's basically like a little mini Shake. You know, it's like Shake is a super high-end compositor and doesn't do everything that Shake does. But what it does do is it's a nodal compositor, which lets you do high-end visual effects. So you can do all that stuff inside a Final Cut.
Is this for chroma key kind of stuff, like green screen?
It's for pulling the green screens in MacBreak specifically. And you're going to see some of that when we do some of the new Rode 1080Ps that shows you behind the scenes of the software end of things. You're going to see how that works. But it is a, to give you an idea, the Shake renders were taking us about 8 hours per camera to do to render. So it only takes 15 or 20 minutes to set up the key, but it takes 8 hours, because they're big files. Now we don't even bother. We just edit the whole thing in green screen. We add the plugin to it, and it adds 20 minutes over what it would render without any plugin. So it's about an hour render.
Power the
whole
the GPU.
Because it's all just using the GPU to do the rendering. And so Anyway, for those out there using Final Cut Pro Studio, that's my pick of the week.
This is an interesting thing because it won't work on a MacBook. You have to have a real video card in your Mac.
It will work.
It just won't work fast.
It won't work fast. Yeah, yeah.
Is this something people can download?
They can download a demo at dvgarage.com. And there's tons of tutorials. And even if you don't like this kind of stuff, you can watch the movies and you can see cool stuff. You know, it's one of those things that there's lots of eye candy up there. And so you can see how graphics get done and all that fun stuff. So anyway, but it's a little fun application.
Sounds tasty.
Merlin?
My application, my Mac pick is called Sleepless. And when I got my MacBook Pro, I retired my 118-pound 17-inch G4. Boy, that thing is heavy. It's heavy and it's big. And so right now I've mentioned this before, but I'm just going to use it as a media server. So I just set it by the TV and let it, you know, basically run my iTunes movies onto the TV and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, slowly but surely I'm getting that kind of set up. I'm moving out of the 1970s in my multimedia setup. But of course the problem is if you don't want it to take up a huge vertical footprint. Is that a phrase? By leaving the lid up. It's nice to be able to run it lid closed. And I've been trying 3 or 4 different applications to help me run it with the lid closed. And the best one I found so far is called Sleepless. So if you've got an old PowerBook, supposedly you need to be very careful doing this with iBooks because of heat issues. Although I could imagine it being a problem with lots of different ones. But I haven't had any problems yet. You get Sleepless, $9.50 shareware. It's available at alxsoft.com. And you just throw it on there and you say, you know what, don't let this sleep. It gives you a little bit of choices. You can do things like say, you want just the monitor to sleep, you know, leave the system up. There's some variability to it, but it's been working great. And then I can just run the functionality over desktop remote and remote desktop. And it works like a champ.
I love remote desktop.
Remote desktop is like magic to me.
Oh my god!
Especially when you shrink it and make it to one tiny little window, and you know, can I just say Alex 2 words? Logan's Run.
Just to give it the thing about remote desktop, just to take us off the rails here for just a second, is that I needed files on one of the computers in the office while I was in India. So I'm sitting in Mumbai and I need these files. And there was something very surreal about using remote desktop to access my laptop in the office to FTP files from another computer. Up to, you know, so I was like linking into the office.
That's like playing Apple IIe games on a Windows.
Dude, it was this point where, you know, you don't really think about it. You go, oh, I got Apple Remote Desktop and I'll do it. And I'm sitting in this hotel room in Mumbai, just sitting there, just like moving my computer around and opening Transmit and moving stuff, you know, moving files from one of the other computers. And and then there was this point where I really realized what I was doing. I was like, this is like, it was just the surreal connection of, you know.
It completely feels like that. And especially because when you're watching it on TV, you know, in the case of the way I'm using it is like we're sitting there watching 30 Rock and I'm able to change like, or Battlestar Galactica and say, okay, we'll go to the next movie. And it feels really weird to see like you're working on your Mac and then across the room on a screen, you're watching the same thing happen.
And one of the things we've been trying to do is not have to have a lot of people when we want to shoot shows. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working on this new Photoshop show and we wanted to set it up so that no one had to be here other than me. And so we have the 950 literally sitting out there with the cable running back to the computer in the back where the RAIDs are. And I'm using the remote desktop to control the capture station. So I can see myself in the capture station and I hit OK, record. And then I close that window and then I do my show. But it's like, it's totally, I'm doing my own show by myself. And I think we're actually using Chicken of the VNC, which is pretty mm-hmm. much the same thing for that specific one, because Ben set it up.
Guys, I have drool coming out of my mouth right now.
There's several candidates in this space. Just quickly, there's Chicken of the VNC. there's remote desktop, and I think Devon Technologies has a new one.
Yeah.
It's like a real stripped down version.
Well, it's really worth it.
It turns out that Apple Remote Desktop is nothing more than VNC. It's just
well done.
They just wrapped
it
up.
With little shiny rounded corners.
Yeah. Scott would like to tell us what his favorite is, and I bet you it has nothing to do with remote desktop.
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Alex, and you're absolutely right as usual. Actually, my pick is Tech Tool Pro. I am so impressed with this program.
It's a great app.
I got it like everybody does, got the free version with my AppleCare, and we all love AppleCare. And I decided to pay $25. They sent me a coupon, said, if you want to upgrade to the real deal, it's $25. I waited for the 4.5.2, which is the Intel compatible version. I got it, and oh man, it fixed things on my 15-inch MacBook Pro that I had not been able to fix forever. And, you know, I got the traditional answer from the air quote geniuses that I was supposed to reinstall my OS every time I would have a problem. And this thing just went in
there.
That
sounds like Windows type advice, Scott, doesn't it?
Yeah. They hired those guys and put them at the genius bar. Anyway, I got really good results. This thing is brilliant. And it's the only program I've ever found that will safely and correctly do disk optimization on my big disks. So I like that. And just for real fun, I don't need this because I already have the application. But if I didn't and I had $229 to spend, they have a cool thing called Tech Tool Protege, which is a USB drive that you can actually boot your Mac from. And oh, if you're like one of those troubleshooting kind of people or something, you just, you know, want to be the fix-it guy that walks around and helps everybody fix their Mac, this little keychain-sized USB drive that has TechTool Pro on it is pretty sweet. That's available from micromat.com.
I'm actually thinking of getting that just for traveling, because a lot of times, like when I go to, if I'm in Africa,
you only need it to save your butt once.
Well, if I'm in Africa and something goes wrong, it isn't like there's an Apple store to go to, you know. And I've been really thinking about just having that in my backpack, just hidden away, just so I can restart it if something really. And I've had that kind of stuff happen.
And just to pick up on something that you said, Scott, because I have had trouble getting my beloved Disk Warrior to work, and I've never understood the directions for getting it to work with Intel, because I'm not particularly bright. But you're saying TechTool Pro will work with Intel where Disk Warrior does not?
That's correct. 4.5.2 of TechTool Pro is Intel compatible.
So that's $98 off the rack, and you got a deal on it upgrading from what's on your drive?
If you get AppleCare, you get the sort of stripped-down version, and they'll upgrade it. At least I got a coupon for $25. I don't know if that's a standard deal, but they sent me one, and I took advantage of it. So for $25, I got TechTool Pro 4.5.2.
Wow.
And if all it did was the one thing it's already done for me, I would have thought that a good investment.
And it's always a good point to mention, don't use Norton.
Don't use Norton, please.
Don't ever do that. John.
The coolest thing that's blowing my mind right now is a program called XTorrent. It's a beta version of a torrent client, or of a BitTorrent client. And it comes from XTorrent.
David Watnabi.
P2P.com. Okay, so the coolest thing about this is that I searched for a torrent. I saw it in the list. I double-clicked it. It automatically started downloading it. I didn't have to go point my client to the torrent file and
you didn't
select
have to fire
place.
Up Azurius. And
nah, there was none
is
of that.
Is it faster?
It's pretty fast. And the thing that I noticed about this was that it's really good about the file share. So kicking the bits back to the kids,
right?
Whereas a lot of places or a lot of torrent clients seem to be very slow at the upload. And so the couple of things that I've downloaded in the torrent-wise in the last week have been like 100% shared back, which is a pretty big
deal. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
Because on Azurius, you've kind of got to ping it to reload and check the tracker again to get it to do that.
So it's really good about that. So the other thing that happens is that it shows there's a couple of tabs that come up. So one of them is a Google tab and the other one is Yahoo. So if the torrent that you're looking for isn't in that main list, it might be in the other thing. So it shows the web page. I'm looking at
it shows the web page in XTorrent?
In XTorrent. So this is basically using Apple WebKit to show this. And then you find the torrent, you click the torrent to download it, and you're like, where'd it go? And it's already downloading.
Wow. So if you're into torrents, this sounds like the thing to go to.
So the mind blow was that here's this thing that's basically just, you know, like surfing the web, but instead of downloading it and putting it in a file and making me deal with it, it just does it. Cool thing about this is it takes the geekiness out of the torrents. I'm just dealing with a file at this point. Totally transparent.
That's tasty. And I know that after John actually posted it on the PixelCore forum, I think that, you know, there's a whole bunch of people here that were downloading it. I haven't gotten to it yet, but it's everyone's been impressed.
So another, the last thing about this is that somebody emailed me a torrent file and said, here, check this out. So I dragged it out of my email or mail.app. I put it on the desktop. XTorrent was already running, and I'm like, oh, I'll just switch to XTorrent and open the file. I didn't have to. It automatically found it. It was scanning the desktop for torrent files, new as a default. And so it's just, it picked
it up. That's magical.
And it picked it up, and it started downloading it. I'm like, but so the thing that happened was that I switched to the Finder. I was going to drag it into the thing to make, like, where'd the torrent file go? I know I dragged it. It was already dealt with.
Wow.
And so that's...
So that's XTorrent.
XTorrent.
And where can you find it?
XTorrentP2P.com.
And it's by David Watanabe, the genius behind Newsfire. Wonderful RSS reader.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Isn't that the guy from Lost?
No.
Okay.
John doesn't like it when we talk about Lost.
All right, there you go. So, Scott, where can people find more of your writings?
Well, I'm all over the place, hanging out a lot lately at the Inside Aperture blog for O'Reilly, and then, of course, I've got my Podcasting Tricks blog. And probably a good time for you and I to mention GMT, Alex.
We should have it up, hopefully, by the end of the week or the very beginning of next week. We're going to have Gear Media Tech, where Scott, Leo, and I go crazy over lots of obscure, not so obscure, but cool hardware for both mostly audio, but we're also going to be, I'm going to be doing some video segments that we're going to drop in there as well. And I'm just working through it. I'm trying to make, trying to finish up episode number one. So I think we're actually pretty close. So that should be a lot of fun. And Merlin Mann, 43 Folders.
That's right, 43folders.com. I haven't posted a lot lately. I was telling John before the show, it's so painfully ironic to be a disorganized person who's supposed to be really organized, and it hurts. But so one good thing we recently had come out, I just put out the a compilation, single download podcast of the 8-episode series interview that I did with David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done. You can grab that and get an hour and a half of David Allen goodness. Two theoretically productive men who talk very fast. Lots of really, if you're into David Allen, Getting Things Done, or just interested in learning more about it, I really recommend it. David did some really good stuff, and some real GTD gold came out of that. So
be sure to get the enhanced version of that.
You can get the enhanced version on My Bandwidth, Bill, where you can get the little chapters. Did you actually download that?
Yeah, I did.
And it worked okay for you?
Uh-huh.
And
the chapters, like, because I'm like, oh, you know, getting
blah, things, blah, 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 blah. Write things down.
Like, getting things done is like, okay. So it's an interesting thing, but I'm like, okay, this is to be taken in little tiny bites.
That's really smart. That's true.
You know, this is not something, GTD is not something that you can just go, I'm doing it.
No.
You know, you can't, you have to do it over time. And yeah. I just smashed my head for those of you.
That smacking sound.
that deep thump. Yeah. So John, where can people find you?
You can find me pixelcore.com/forums, but you actually have to be a member to see that.
Right.
So,
if you're not a member.
If you're not a member, twit.tv/forums.
There you go.
And what's up with you, Alex? you're struggling with equipment, it seems like. You're wrestling with opportunities and equipment.
No, I'm mostly just wrestling with just an enormous amount of work. I'm drowning in opportunity. So, sometimes you're busy and sometimes you're not. I'm mostly just busy. And it's gotten to the point where, it's just... I'd like to.
Too much.
It's a little too much right now. So, but I'm just having a good time, and you can find more of my stuff at MacBreak Weekly. That's what I do. I do podcasts.
You need a pizzazz.
I do need a. You know, I was thinking about the wonders of the pizzazz earlier today, and instead of pizzazzing, I just went and got a latte.
Yeah.
But I think
don't
it would
worry,
have been more
Alex,
healthy
I'm
to
sending
pizzazz.
You an electronic chia pet. That'll get you through the night.
I think with electronic chia pet and a pizzazz, I'll be set.
Okay.
That's it. Another MacBreak Weekly is broken.
Cool.
I like that, Scott. I think that's good.
Broken. We call it good.
Yeah. Another MacBreak has been broken.
It was really
hit
broken.
Hit the stop button,
week.
Alex.
Oh, because it's MacBreak.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's Scott. That was Scott's.
That's what you call a way homer.
Yeah, well, we've been trying to find our way home for 18 episodes, so I figured eventually I was actually going to...
I want credit for that. I came up
with it. I did. I just gave you props on that one.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that made it into the show, but, you know, I think given the fact that I'm sitting here next to three people smarter than me and I came up with it...
Hey, are you still recording?
I am.
See, well, it'll make it into the show then, because this is all after
show. But now I'm going to stop.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to stop right now.
All right, fine.
All right, well, we're going to keep talking for a second.
I actually have to stop. Yeah.